Podcast der Pädagogischen Hochschule Wien. Sie hören die Aufzeichnung eines Vortrages im Rahmen des 10. HOPE-Kongresses vom 10. bis 13. Mai 2016 in Wien. Dieser stand unter dem Thema Pädagogik im Spannungsfeld von Krankheit, Migration und Mehrsprachigkeit. Am Wort ist Raphael Oberhuber. Das Thema: Die Sprache der Erkrankung, kognitive Entwicklung und Lebensqualität von Kindern mit schwerer Herzerkrankung.
My very dear ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues, it is an unbelievable pleasure for me that I'm able to be here this morning and that I am allowed and I'm able to speak to you this morning. Before I go to the details of my presentation about the language of the children who are very sick, or about the language from those who are parents of sick children, or teachers of sick children, or brothers and sisters of sick children, or teachers, whoever, let me give me 2 or 3 minutes to tell you some personal remarks, so that everybody in this audience could better understand why I'm so excited that I'm here today. Today, 4 weeks ago, on the April the 13th, I had to undergo my 4th surgery on the open heart. And I was looking like this man 3.5 weeks before. I was born with a very serious congenital heart disease. I had already my first surgery on the open heart when I was a teenager here in Vienna at the General Hospital. Some years later, when I was a young student and I really wanted to become a good teacher, I had to go to the United States of America in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I had my second very, very complex surgery on the open heart. 4 years ago, I already has been a teacher and a psychologist, not so young, but I already have been finished with my studies. I had my 3rd surgery in my own clinic where I work as teacher and as a clinical psychologist. And just 4 weeks ago, I had my 4th one. And by this biography, by my own experiences, it was always a deep pleasure inside of me to help those who are maybe in a similar situation as I was. And let me give you just 1 second that you can see into my heart. Just I can do that. Yeah, okay, that's me 4 weeks ago. And well, everybody who is sick and is serious sick doesn't look very pretty. I have been asked to speak in English. As you already recognized, I'm not a native English speaker, but I hope that I will be able to touch your heart, although I have some mistakes, grammar mistakes, or vocabulary mistakes, or I'm too loud or too bright, or something is not in the way as you know English. Especially for the English teachers in that audience suffer a lot. I'm sorry, but I hope I can touch your mind and your heart during my talk. I am a clinical health psychologist in the Kepler University Clinic in Linz, Austria. And there I'm allowed to treat children with serious heart defects and all those children who are treated at our cardiology. I'm also a teacher for children who suffer from cancer. In addition, I'm a teacher at the University at the Educational University of Upper Austria. I'm allowed to teach their psychology and education of inclusion. And I'm a psychologist in private practice, and I love to treat people who have some challenges in their life, because I think, because of my own experiences, I know a little bit about their suffering. It is always a pleasure for me to help children and my patients, doesn't matter how old they are, to give them a vision, to help them that they have a kind of perspective or a good perspective in their future, as this little picture could show. What I am able to do when I am healthy enough or healthy again. All of you know this very famous picture from Edvard Munch. Many people, many of our children suffer a lot like this picture shows to us. And my desire always is to help those people who suffer in that way. As you know, this is the a picture from the age of expressionism, where the bad things are shown in art. And as it is in the impressionism, Claude Monet, for example, he shows us in his pictures, in his imaginations, how wonderful life could be or could become again. This is one of my favorite photos. As you see, it's a flower growing in the middle of a street. And it is just a symbol for a well-known term for teachers and psychologists. It's a symbol for resilience. As you probably know, resilience originally comes from the physics. It describes the flexibility of material. What was that? Monolinguistic or whatever. It describes the flexibility of material, the bending instead of breaking. And for us as teachers, as psychologists, as those who treat children or patients, we mean by that we are able to grow in spite of adverse conditions. I believe strongly in that everybody of us has inside, more or less, this skill, this ability of resilience. This is a photo I made in the mountains. It's a flower just around only rocks. But you see, the flower is flourishing a lot. And I, by myself, of course, I have a lot of visions and perspectives, even then when I'm dead sick. For example, to go with my family again into the mountains. At the moment, I'm very, very tired and I cannot really go into the mountains, but this is one of my vision, to be there again. When I was in the United States of America as a patient and many years later as a young scientist, I saw in the children's hospital where I had my own second heart surgery, this inscription. It says, "The child first and always." And that means to me that as psychologist, as doctor, as teacher, as nurse, whoever, I have the desire and the vision to concentrate and to give focus to these children. But as everybody of us knows, it's unbelievable necessary to learn my own skills and to know that's necessary to have enough distance also. But this is a very necessary thing to have the to have children very close, and on the other side to think about myself. And in addition, I have to learn my own my own patterns about my language, about what are my skills in communication, and what are the skills of my physical sick or mental sick children. I had a heart patient. She now is, I think, 8 years old, but she had her surgery on the open heart when she was 5 years old. And 2 years later, she visited me again in our hospital, and she showed me her doll, her intensive care doll. And this was her language, or her kind of expression, how she did overcome the bad situation of serious heart disease. And this is one kind of so-called language, how to express their fears, their anxiety, their hopes, their pain, her pain. I hope everybody could understand. As I told you, I've been asked to speak in English. I hope you understand. As I told you, I'm a teacher for cancer patients, and I like this photo and the next one to give children perspective, to give them vision. The first photo of this child after her cancer situation and chemotherapy, she sent this photo to me. The first growing hair again, and mama could do a special hair for hair. And this always, I try to bring these visions into the heart and mind of my children. And I love to treat these children. This is a young heart child, but I'm not only I should not only treat the sick children. I love to know that the patient is not the child only. The patient is the family. The patient are the brothers and sisters of the child. The patient are the teachers. I will tell you at the end that I often visit teachers because they need support, as everybody in the system needs support. Good. Now these were some personal remarks. I would like to tell you some things from the research aspect, and I would like to tell you about the cognitive development and quality of life of children who had very, very bad, serious heart defect. And probably most of you are not cardiologists, so let me give you half a minute to explain what's about a hypoplastic left heart syndrome. As you see on the left side, this is a normal heart. Most of you have got it since your birth. And the right one is the left hypoplastic left heart syndrome. This is a child who is born without a left ventricle. And nobody of all children who were born with a hypoplastic left heart syndrome had the chance to survive till 1995. And at that time, three very intelligent doctors, Dr. Norwood, Dr. Glenn, and Dr. Fontan, found very interesting and good methods to help these children. And beginning in Boston, Philadelphia, and then on other bigger children heart centers, they started to give surgeries, three surgeries, to these children who were born with that bad heart defect. In Linz, where I'm working and where I'm living, there since 1997, we make operations on the heart with this bad disease. Here also in Vienna since some years already, and in all bigger heart centers on the world, three very, very risky surgeries are done on these children. But now is the questions. You know, surgeons love to take the knife. But is it acceptable from the point of view of quality of life to do these surgeries on these children? And is it allowed to give these surgeries to the children? Because we know from the neurological point of view and from the radiological point of view that these results show that the brain of the children are not so well developed as the brains are from healthy children. And so for me as teacher and as psychologist was the question, is it ethically acceptable that they have such high-risk surgeries, and how is the development from the cognitive part and from quality of life to these children? And let me give you some few statistical results. I promise you that it will not be boring for you. The sample we had in HLHS means hypoplastic left heart syndrome. And all children who were born from 1997 to 2009 and they who were treated in Linz are in our sample. There were 149 births, 25 deceased after birth, 24 deceased after the Novod procedure, the first surgery a few days after birth, 14 deceased after the Glenn procedure, 4 to 5 months after birth. 1 deceased after Fontan. Fontan is the third surgery when the children are 3 or 4 years old. 64 were total deceased. 1 had a very severe hypoxic encephalopathy after the Fontan procedure. 11 children came from Croatia. And I was able to treat them when they were in Austria, in Linz, at the clinic. But I wasn't able to test them because they didn't speak German or English, and I didn't speak Serbo-Croatic. And 48 did participate in that study. And from these 48, 5 of them fell out, so we had results of 43 children. I know this is a very small sample for the statistical things, but anyway, for one heart center, 43 children with that bad, serious heart defect is a lot. Yeah, 25 didn't participate on the study. Yeah, that's again the same. Which methods did we have? I know one colleague from the psychology. I don't know how many others there, but most of you know the Wechsler Intelligence Scale for Children, 4th edition. Then the instrument for quality of life, inventory and qualitative content analysis. I explained that to you. The Wechsler Intelligence Scale for Children, as probably most of you know, it's differentiated in verbal comprehension index, Sprachverständnis in German, then the perceptual reasoning index, that means wahrnehmungsgebundenes Denken, then the working memory index, and at least the processing speed, Arbeitsgedächtnis. und Verarbeitungsgeschwindigkeit to German. And in addition to this instrument, I tried to find out about the results about quality of life. And this is a health-related quality of life measurement. And it determines by self-evaluation from the children and assessment of the parents. And it's the quality of life in physical, social, emotional, and scholastic area. So I'm very interested to differentiate these things concerning to quality of life. And it's a well-known instrument for psychologists. And it is differentiated in physical and social, psychosocial areas. Also, it's very interesting for me to ask the children about their social skills and the parents about the social skills of the children. About that's interesting for you, I think. Teacher-student contacts. That's, I think, very, very necessary to know about that. About the individual strengths and challenges from the children, about their personality traits, and what are the results. I am more a person who loves the practice, but in addition, I have to know something about statistical results, so I make it very short, but maybe some statistical results could be interesting for you too. As you see, the mean of the intelligence, or the development of the intelligence from our hypoplastic left heart children was about 84. And that's a little bit lower than the average of healthy children. Probably you know everybody should have 100, then he's in the average, but the mean has just 84. But, and that's very interesting, you see the minimum and the maximum. There have been people, children, who get results about 134 or 150, though they were very, very, very high intelligent, although they were born with a very, very serious heart defect. So there have been children with a very, very high potential. And for me as psychologist, of course, those who are just have 40 or a little bit above are very interesting for me to help them to learn more and more. As you probably know, this is the distribution of intelligence for healthy people. And now I would like to compare this distribution to our hypoplastic left heart children. And you see it on the red bars are the healthy, the normative sample. And the blue are those who are from our sample from the hypoplastic left heart syndrome children. And as you can hopefully recognize, the high intelligent and the above average intelligent children are the same as it is in the normal distribution, just in the average and in the low intelligent and mentally inadequate intelligent, the children are very, very high. So that means that there are, of course, many of them with their bad heart defect, that they had not the best outcome, but anyway, there were some who had a really good outcome. The same happened at verbal comprehension, perceptual reasoning, processing speed, but there was one difference, and that could be interesting for you. In working memory, it is the same. The hypoplastic left heart children were the same as it was with the normative sample. And for me, as teacher and psychologist, I have the question, why just in working memory? I could explain that because these children, my hypoplastic left heart children, are so trained intensively that their memory for short things where they could really train it are good as the normative sample. And that means that their parents and their teachers are really great to help them to get a similar result than the healthy children get. Okay, I will not explain everything to the next, it's just statistical, but maybe the questions I had in that study and that research, maybe these questions are interesting for you. Because if we would like to understand the language of our children, of our sick children, we need to know many, many details of these children, so then we could understand their language. Was there any influence when parents already knew during pregnancy that they get hypoplastic left heart syndrome? Was there any gender difference? Maybe a little joke. In Austria, obviously, if you are a boy, you need to have got a hypoplastic left heart syndrome, then you are better in verbal comprehension than girls. But okay, it's just a joke, but it's one result, you see, it's a significant, the boys are better, but just from the hypoplastic. Then there are the siblings. Is it only child, eldest child, youngest child, middle child, twin, etc.? Did that have any influence to the cognitive development? Then there was just interesting for the doctors I go for. But this is maybe interesting for you. The cerebral perfusion. As you probably know, the most difficult situation during heart surgery is during the time when you are on the heart-lung machine. I think I already had 7-8 hours on heart-lung machine in my life. It's enough, hopefully, for me. But you are always very afraid for that time because there could happen a lot to your brain at that time. And our doctors in Linz developed a new technique that the cerebral perfusion could be better done during heart-lung machine so that the danger that the brain goes away during heart surgery is very less. So, about comorbidity, I hope you as teachers know so many things about your children. They didn't have just hypoplastic left heart syndrome, they had attention deficit hyperactivity syndrome, they had protein losing syndrome, they had sensomotoric problems, and that's very, very interesting for us as children, as teachers, to know, okay, this is not only heart defect, there is a side effect too, and I need to know about that. Three of them had dyslexia, one had an insult, one had epilepsy, one had autism, and one, there was a mother, and she said, I'm sure my boy has hyperactivity syndrome. He didn't have anything from that, but the mother thought. And for me, as a treating person, it's good to know about that, what the mother thinks, because that could have an influence to my treatment and to my intervention, hopefully. Have the surgeons been better when they did the surgeries every day, starting from 1997 to now, before 2004 or after? Then, for us, interesting. Did assistance of a second teacher help to that the intelligence of the children could grow? How many of them did have a special education need? You know, in Austria we say the SPF. And which types of school do our children with a bad heart defect attend? And they were in many schools. So for me, from the ethical point of view, it's great that we have this hypoplastic left heart syndrome children in our schools. I know if they were born before 1995, they had to die all over the world. But now they are able to live, and they can attend elementary school, junior high school, academic health, secondary high school, special needs educational school, vocational school, apprenticeship, alternative school, one we have unemployed. But all of them are hypoplastic left heart children, and they didn't have any chance to survive many years ago. And now they are allowed to live. What's about the second, the teacher-student contact? Of course, if the contact is well, you need not to be a scientist to know that. Then the development of intelligence becomes better, and the social performance rating is better. Anyway, in Austria, still it is. I think in Sweden it's better, or in some other countries it's better than here in Austria. But when parents are well educated, the children have better results in cognitive things. And the same happens to our hypoplastic left heart children. Similar to the cognitive development, also the results were to our quality of life. We had some with very bad rating of quality of life, but also we had some of them who were very excited to live, and they had learned about skills to love their life, although they had sometimes bad side effects. And you see, many of them had get 100 in their results. Okay, let's do the next. But that was interesting for me. I did a comparison between our little sample in Austria and to those in the United States of America. Mrs. Mellian, she did a meta study in 2014, and she had asked many children and their parents in Cincinnati Children's Hospital, in Philadelphia, Boston, Wisconsin, in Phoenix, California, San Francisco, and Texas, and Dallas. And from these children, and they had the same instrument, the health-related quality of life from Varney, the same instrument I did with my children in my sample. And there was, that's interesting, no really significant difference between the children in the United States with similar heart disease. They were not so good with healthy children, but not really bad. And I give it to the next, to other diseases, for example, end-stage renal disease, or obesity, asthma, diabetes, and our hypoplastic left heart children were not worse than the children with these defects. And, no, just one thing, when the children were adolescent, there was no difference between the healthy one and my hypoplastic left heart children. And that touched me deeply. Okay, when parents think that their children are fine, the children think the same. That was about the correlation I go through, because it's too much statistic now. I think some are, it's boring for you then. I'm not a cardiologist. I'm not a heart surgeon. But anyway, I think I know a lot about the heart of my children. I know about their fears, their hopes, their desires. And I know everybody of these 43 children where I showed the results to you. They love their life, although they have bad side effects. They love to be normal. I know about their fears, but I know that they are able to have high quality of life. That most of you know this photo. Yeah. I know that they have the desire to stay alive. Yeah, they have their dreams. They love to go to school. Yeah, they love to go to school. Yeah, it's better to go to school than to go to hospital, as you know. Yeah, and I visit in all Austria schools of children with hypoplastic left heart syndrome. And I teach the classmates, I teach the teachers, and often I tell them about some a little bit strange patterns of their hypoplastic left heart child. Some imagination. Hospital comes into school. Maybe at least I wrote some books for children with heart disorder. I wrote also some books for siblings, for brothers and sisters, and for little children when they go to the kindergarten. And that's my special kid. I wrote a book for adult. It's also translated. I have it here. It is also translated in English. A life flourishing in the face of adversity. The term of resilience. And if you are interested, my wonderful wife took me today by car to come here because I'm really still very tired, so I wasn't able to go with the train there. So she took me here and she has some books in the car. If you are interested, of course, I can discuss that with you after my talk. One last question and then I'm finishing. This is Andy. And Andy was born with this serious heart defect, congenital heart disease, and with the left side paralyzed. He already had two open heart surgeries and never he lost his left paralysis, of course. But he had the desire to learn playing the piano. And I know him since his birth. And he asked me, he knows that I'm a piano teacher, and he asked me, could I learn playing the piano? And I said, of course you can. And I helped him to find with his left arm the bass note. And he started to play the piano. I'm not sure. Oh, I'm sure. My wife is a radiologist, but I think if I give Andy into the MRI, the parts in his brain who are responsible for the left side was after playing the piano with a better network, I think. But I don't have a scientific what's the advice? proof, sorry, okay. Yeah. And I'm excited about him. He's very, very well integrated. He will not become a lang lang. I don't either. Yeah. But at the end of my talk, thank you for your attention. But before, one of my expression to feel what's going on inside of me and how should I overcome with pain or whatever or with good feelings. Feelings of love, for example. I love to play the piano. I will give you at the end of my talk some short pieces, then you can eat. some short pieces of very famous music pieces. But be aware, behind every music melody you listen now, there was a composer who suffered a lot. before he was able to write, or maybe he was able to write this wonderful music because he suffered so much. So, and maybe you could have a little bit time for you, just to, of course you can go out and take your food, but maybe you could enjoy the music and you can think about your patterns of communication, of your kind of speaking, of your kind of language. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
Sie hörten einen Podcast der Pädagogischen Hochschule Wien.